I would like to make a few comments concerning the difference between the Black Revolution and the Negro Revolution. There's a difference. When you study the historic nature of revolutions, the motive of a revolution, the objective of a revolution, and the result of a revolution, and the methods used in a revolution, you may change words. You may devise another program. You may change your goal and you may change your mind. Look at the American Revolution in 1776. That revolution was for what? For land. How was it? Why did they want land? Independence. How was it carried out? Bloodshed. Number one, it was based on land, the basis of independence. And the only way they could get it was bloodshed. The French Revolution, what was it based on? The landless against the landlord. What was it for? Land. How did they get it? Bloodshed. Was no love lost. Was no compromise. Was no negotiation. I'm telling you, you don't know what a revolution is. Because when you find out what it is, you'll get back in the alley. You'll get out of the way. The Russian Revolution. What was it based on? Land. The landless against the landlord. How did they bring it about? Bloodshed. You haven't got a revolution that doesn't involve bloodshed. And you're afraid to bleed. I said you're afraid to bleed. Long as the white man sent you to Korea, you bled. He sent you to Germany, you bled. He sent you to the South Pacific to fight the Japanese, you bled. You bleed for white people. But when it comes time to seeing your own churches being bombed and little black girls murdered, you haven't got no blood.
As it seems, the American dream ain't nothing but another calculated scheme to get us locked up, shut up and back and chained. Who denies the future? Rob our names, kept my history a mystery, but now I see the American dream wasn't meant for me. Cause Lady Liberty's a hypocrite, she lied to me. While it's for freedom, education, equality never gave me nothing but slavery. And now look at how dangerous it made me, calling me a madman. Cause I'm strong and bold, and with this scuffle of knowledge of the lies you told, promised me emancipation and this new name. Arguing forgave my people with starvation. Fathers of the country never cared for me. They kept my ancestors shackled up in slavery. And Uncle Sam never did a damn thing for me. Set lies out the facts in my history. So now I'm sitting here mad cause I'm unemployed. But the government's glad cause they enjoy when my people are down. So they can screw us around. Time to change the government now. Panther power. Panther power. Panther power from the space that resides within. Go toe-to-toe with the panther and you just can't win. Don't restrain back, suppress the rest. The rich get richer and the poor take less. The American dream was an American nightmare. You kept my people down and refused to fight fair. The Ku Klux Klan tried to keep us out with signs of doom and state. No blacks allowed with intimidation and segregation. With the wait for our freedom, but now we're impatient. Blacks, the other of skin, yeah, don't sell out. Freedom, equality, get out, yell out. Don't you never be ashamed of what you are. It's your Panther power that makes you a star. Panther power. Panther power. Mama would never let me forget my history, hoping I was set free. Things that were put on me, wanted to be more than just free. Had to know the truth back about my history. I couldn't settle for being a statistic. Couldn't survive in this capitalistic government, cause this was meant to hold us back. Using ignorance, drugs, and sneak attack in my community. They killed the unity, but when I charge them, try to claim immunity. I strike America like a case of heart disease. Panther power is running through my arteries. Try to stop me, oh boy, you be clawed to death, cause I'll be fighting for my freedom with my dying breath. Do you remember? That's what I'm asking you. You think you're living free? Don't make me laugh at you. Open your eyes, realize you've been locked in chains. Said you wasn't civilized and stole your name. Cause the time has passed, see you all forget. There is no liberty for you and me. We ain't free yet. Panther power.
Black power. Black power and more power to my people. This is your brother, soldier in arms, comrade in battle, Sean Saddam Kweli. Happy to be able to broadcast live once again to you from right here in the hills and smells of North America. As always, this is a privilege. It's a joy. This is an esteemed honor to be able to talk to you, my sisters, my brothers, and some others. From this bold revolutionary radio broadcast, Black Power Radio. We want to give thanks to the God of our forefathers and foremothers who has us in many different names. We give thanks and say that regardless of land, label, or language, there is but one God. We give thanks to our ancestors, those who were the mothers and fathers of civilization, the architects of civilization, the architect of social sciences, psychology, mathematics, chemistry, and much, much more. Our great ancestors who paved the way for us to be here and who laid the foundation that we stand on here in 2013 going into 2014. We give thanks for those who fought when they were taken captive by an oppressor and an enemy, put on slave ships and taken westerly. We give thanks for those who fought back and who resisted, and those who, even when they got here to the shores of Jamestown, Virginia, and got here in the hells and smells of North America, they resisted in formations like the UNIA and the Honorable Marcus Mosiah Garvey, like the Modern Science Temple of America and Father Noble Drew Ali, like the Nation of Islam and the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad that produced a Minister Malcolm X, a Muhammad Ali, a Minister Louis Farrakhan, and others. Those who resisted in formations like the Black Panther Party for Self-Defense and Chairman Bobby Seale and Defense Minister Huey P. Newton and the Forte Brothers and so many others, Little Bobby Hutton and Angela Davis and Bunchy Carter, and those that came out of that Oakland formation, those that came out of Lowndes County formation before that were Kwame Ture, Stokely Carmichael, and Bob Brown, and Mukasa, Rick Dada, and those brothers who fought, those who went underground and fought in what was known as the Black Liberation Army. We are thankful for those who have fought for us, with the Deacons for Defense and so many others who have fought. We have to know that we're still in a struggle today, even though it's 2013, and we're here at 8 o'clock hour, 8 p.m. Eastern. The struggle still continues. So salute to my comrades there in Africa, what we know as Azania, South Africa, and the entire continent of Akubaline, with the colonial master called later Africa, from Afrikaners. We're thankful for you soldiers and you out there fighting. Those of you in the struggle right now, we salute to continue while the struggle continues. So we're here in the West holding the line and letting you know that the struggle is on and popping, that black people must go free, that we must be liberated. We must return to our names, our language, our culture, our folkways, our foreways, and the norms, the power of our very own being. So we're thankful to that one God for sending us many messengers and prophets, the great messiahs, the warners, those who came with great revelation, and we're thankful for him sending those who came as freedom fighters and revolutionaries. We're thankful that even as COINTELPRO destroyed the Black Panther Party of the 1960s formation, that out of Dallas, Texas, 1989, that was a formation that sprung up under a brother named Aaron Michaels and a few others, with inspiration from the Black Panther Militia from Milwaukee, Wisconsin, that we started right there in that base in the South, and we sprung up and moved all throughout the world, and that we moved throughout that region and ultimately fell into the hands of a beautiful, bold, bald-headed black man who was 100% black man, unrelenting, uncompromising, and unflinching with the enemy, who told you his purpose on this planet was to give our enemies hell from the cradle to the grave and unite our people into one people. I speak of the Black Power General and the man who served as our national chairman from the year of 1998 until his transitional phase from this planet, talking about 2001, the Honorable Dr. Khalid Abdul-Muhammad. Giving thanks to a brother who took that mantle and took that torchlight and served from that point, from 2001 until 2013, of just a few months ago, a man who is a Pan-Africanist, a brother who is a great lecturer, a great researcher, a man who is a great organizer, a man who organized a group called Unity Nation on the campus of Howard University and now organized 1996 Black Lawyers for Justice, a man who you know as the attorney at war, who I call the Attorney General, the five-star general. He has served as the longest-standing chairman of any Panther regiment, talking about Attorney Malik Zulu Shabazz. And we give thanks to a brother who served with the both of them, served with the Honorable Dr. Khalid Abdul-Muhammad as his national assistant and served as his national chief of staff and then served under Attorney Malik Zulu Shabazz as his national chief of staff, who started right there in our founding base and state in Dallas, Texas, with a group called MIAT, the Metropolitan African American Think Tank, a true Pan-Africanist who worked with the likes of the Baba, Dr. John Henry Clark, who worked with the likes of Dr. Tony Meyer, Tony Browder, who worked with the greats out there like Minister Louis Farrakhan, who worked with the greats out there to get our minds back on the path of Africa, black liberation, black salvation, nationalism, to do for self. Talking about a brother who I call the professor. You know him as our national chairman, Minister Hashim Nzinga. This is Black Power Radio. We greet you in peace. Assalamu alaikum. Some of you say hotep. Say shalom, shalom. Free the land. Black laws for all black people. And as the Black Power General say, what's up? This is most definitely our hour and time. And as you listen to me now, we're going into a broadcast that is talking about the evils of the entertainment industry, the Jewish hidden hand. We'll be joined by the great Brother Leonard Rowe. Brother Leonard Rowe of the great documentary, What Really Happened to Michael Jackson? What happened to Michael Jackson? And in effect, we're still talking about the evils of the entertainment or the entertainment industry. As you see now, so many of our brothers and sisters trying to get a contract, trying to become a rap star, trying to become a movie star, trying to be on TV, trying to be in cinema, trying to do this, trying to do that, trying to just be in Hollywood in general. And then when they finally make their way into Hollywood and they make their way on the big screen, when they start out in their early days, they're just talented actors, they're talented musicians, they are talented speakers, they are talented workers, they are talented people. But it seems like after some time, after they get established, after they get around directors and get around producers and they get around people who have their contracts in their hands, something changes. Something changed in Lil' Kim. Something changed in Nicki Minaj. Something changed in Lil Wayne. Something changed in Juvenile. Something changed in Michael Jackson. Something changed in James Brown. Something changes in your entertainers out here. When you see them from the beginning to the end, and we want to talk about what happens to the entertainers when they get into Hollywood. Something has happened to Kanye West. As you see him go under assault from the ADL, the Anti-Defamation League, for talking about black people not having the same opportunities and resources as Jewish people and not having the same oil partners as Jewish people and others. He came under assault, but something happened to Kanye West that has made him lash out. Now, even though he's there with a white Kim Kardashian or Armenian mixed Kim Kardashian, he's still trying to speak out for black people. Some weird stuff going on in the world today. And Brother Leonard Rowe is going to explain it to us. Our national chairman is going to explain it to us. We have on the line our national spokeswoman, Sister Nadia Sada Shakur, who will take 15 minutes to explain that to you and explain the revolutionary politics of what's happening out here. But if you are concerned about your babies, and you are concerned about what is being implanted in the minds of our future, this is a show not to miss, because there's a document that's floating around. It's on Facebook. It's out there on your website. You should Google this as we're talking. Google the secret meeting that changed rap music and destroyed a generation. And one of those high executives, high what they call decision makers in the music industry, coming up out of Europe in the early 80s and established himself in the business, begins to talk about the meanings behind the closed doors to turn the influential positive beats of Africa and drums of Africa and the music and rhythm and spirit of natural black men and women into something low down, filthy, and shameful. Oh, my sister Beyonce just released an album. They say it was a video album. And in this video album, Sister Beyonce has become more racier than ever, more butt-naked, more filthy and low-down than ever, they tell me. That's what they tell me. I haven't seen it. But we want to ask the question, what is going on out here in the world? And how do we turn the tide? How do we take back our music, our entertainment, our theater, our television, our minds, our hearts, our bodies, and spirit? So with these next 15 minutes, I want to bring in, as we prepare to bring on our national chairman, I want to bring in our national spokeswoman, who is the author of a book called Cold Soul. And if you haven't got that, she's going to tell you how to get this book, Cold Soul. But here for the next 15 minutes, we'll hear from our national spokeswoman, the national spokeswoman of the new Black Panther Party for Self-Defense. Let's bring on, and into this discussion, as we open up, let's bring on Sister Nadia Asada Shakur. Black power, my sister.
Black power, black power. I give thanks, Comrade Sean Kwali, sir, and I give thanks to the listeners that are with us tonight on Black Power Radio as we break down this very extreme phenomena that has been overlooked. And I can't fault our people for not seeing the signs, because it's dealing with something that's so intertwined with us spiritually and emotionally that it's hard to understand it unless you have the blueprint laid out for you. So I give honor to God and the ancestors that we have the ability to lay out the format for our people so that they can understand how they're really being manipulated by the sounds and rhythms that they listen to every day. So, Dig, black and African community, we're talking about the process that the media is using to destroy our minds and indoctrinate our children. Now, Brother Sean Kwali just made a critical point when he said what we need to do to take back our media. Well, first we have to understand why is there an importance for us to take back or control our own media. Malcolm X said, you can never rely on your oppressor to give you positive images of yourself. So as long as we rely on the standing system of media to project positive images, positive black male and female role models for our community, then we will never truly receive any of the information that will be conducive to our positive or productive growth in said community. Now, I was reading a book that Brother Professor Griff so eloquently and tediously put together, which he laid out the Illuminati's personal hand in controlling the hip-hop industry. Now, me being a child of the 80s, I grew up in a certain time period of music, the transition of hip-hop over from an earlier style of music, you know, and then it progressed on into what in the 90s we would call as gangster rap. But what happened in that time period, somebody had to make the decision to filter out the sounds of what the artists really wanted to produce out to the people and what ended up on the radio. So from what I understood from Brother Griff's book, they have certain plans or laws that they have to abide by. They have certain specific attacks on the human body that they conduce the music specifically to. There was a part of the book where they said if you create images strictly promoting money, sex, drugs, and materialism, then that would be the basis of why people are producing that form of music. And if we use that analysis with the current version of hip-hop we see today, you don't hear any Tribe Called Quest anymore or Roots or anyone that's pushing out holistic spirituality through their hip-hop music. What we get, like you said earlier, Comrade, we get the Lil Wayne's of the world. We get the now distorted Kanye West, who started out somewhat balanced, but we all know that as soon as you try and project any form of conscious mind or third eye view or any liberated concepts outside of the fascist society, they will push your back against the wall. Now, a lot of times we have the conspiracy theorists pop up, and they always want to group a lot of things together, so it makes it hard for the black community to figure out, well, is this person really a part of the Illuminati per se, or are they just a high-functioning retard? Well, both of those are destructive to the black community in our current state of crisis because we don't have time to continue to play with ourselves. So it's very critical that we make decisions on what we allow to be heard and around in our households and our community. Now, when it comes to the Hollywood scene in general, we cannot continue to lie to ourselves like we keep pushing African talents into Hollywood, we might dilute it and we'll become the majority and we can take it over. That is a backward strategy if you really understand how intertwined Hollywood is to the backbone of this society. It's built off of industry and media. There is no possible way, even if you put every black rapping, singing, dancing African, so-called American in Hollywood right now, we would still not have any social, economic, political power to make any moves out there. And that's what we'll break down later on when we bring in the illicit Jews activity and their control over the whole Hollywood industry itself. But if you look at the black actors that have risen up and taken a stance against Hollywood, you will also see the stance that Hollywood took against them. So we can no longer say that this isn't systematic. We can no longer say that our black actors that have stood up for us are not being attacked, but they don't have any community support because they're in Hollywood. They've so-called left us and made it, and they've never come back. So it's upon the black community to uplift ourselves and create our own media. The New Black Panther Party for Self-Defense is a military organization, but we are a nation-building political vanguard party. So that means our basis programs is to instill the desire to create and build institutions conducive to revolutionary change. Now, in order for us to have an institution to take back the media images that are being projected to our family, then that means we would have to start utilizing our natural talents and skills that we use every day, rapping on the corner, making videos on YouTube, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. We have not put in any real time, energy, or finances behind our own black producers, our own black directors, writers, and composers. And we have certain small entities that have popped up in different countries on a national basis, but they are not solidified. Once again, we're dealing with the global conglomerate that is located on the West Coast in Hollywood, but they control the world's media and distribution to a great degree. So in order for us to offset that, we have to start institutionalizing our talents now and creating the black media pool. Then we can start presenting the images that we want to our people. But if you will not support someone who's doing that effort, or if you yourself have the ability to but still won't, you have no room to cry or whine about your child wanting to look like Nicki Minaj, because this is what you have allowed to be presented in front of them. You have the ability to control your environment. It's time for us to start taking back control in the little ways so that we can have the ability to take back control in the major ways, comrade. And this issue in itself is even more drastic because we have a black president now. And y'all say, well, what does that have to do with anything, sister? Obama didn't do anything to our music. He doesn't have to personally. By him being the black spokesperson of this country, if he comes out and sings a Marvin Gaye song, do you not think the whole point of him doing that was to not have some type of emotional, spiritual reaction and connection to the overall black population? That's him using his image to project whatever pacification at that time that he needed to buffer out to us. And we accepted it. Because right after he sang us Marvin Gaye, what did he do? Went to the National Black Caucus and told us that we need to calm down about slavery, get over it, and pick ourselves up about the bootstraps. But we didn't worry about that because we were still caught up on the fact that he knew a Marvin Gaye song. That touched us because we've always been touched by the music that we've grown up with. That is the part that sickens me the most is because the fascists are using our very God-given talents against us. As African people, rhythm and motion, rhythm and beats flows through us. We have a divine frequency that connects us to the ethers, and we utilize music to tap into that realm. We utilize music to rejoice. We utilize music to speak to our ancestors, to channel their energy, to heal. There are multiple reasons and uses for music and why it is connected so strongly and intertwined so deeply in the global African community. So there is no wonder that one of the main surviving tools that was used by the captured Africans here in America on the plantations was music. Where do we think the old Negro spiritual came from? That was the only way that we could continue to motivate ourselves to bend over in those fields and pick that cotton when we had no more fingers or no more skin on our fingers to stand to pick, and we had to sing ourselves to continue to motivate ourselves. And then on the flip side, we sung rules, laws, and codes and messages to each other while we were rebelling. So we don't just use music to pacify ourselves or coddle ourselves to the next day. We've also used music as our battle cry. We've been doing that from the lands of Africa, and we continue to do it here. We gave ourselves ways to get away from the slave master in our old Negro spirituals. I bet y'all didn't know what they were talking about when they said wade in the water. They weren't telling you to go walk around in the mud for no reason. They were telling you when you running for those slave dogs to wade in the water, and you would not have the scent on you any longer. These are the hidden truths of our background and our attachment to music and our use of music, and they know this. So what better way from them to control a charismatic, talented slave but to utilize the very thing that keeps them sustained and fulfilled against them and their own people? This is why we have the Lil Waynes of the world. It's hard for you to discredit Lil Wayne when he's so charismatic. I mean, it shouldn't be hard. If you're a revolutionary with any type of knowledge behind you, you can discredit any of that bull. But I'm saying to the average thinking blind person, the average unconscious individual, all they see is somebody that for the last 6 or 7 years, he's put out 20 albums and hasn't written one verse. To me, that is talent. I would never take that talent away from that brother. But I will take it away from him if he continues to use it to destroy the black community. So what we're here at is an impasse, a critical impasse where we have to make a choice whether we're going to choose full revolutionary change or are we going to continue to straddle the fence and pick and choose what part of white supremacy we want to support, what part of white supremacy is still comfortable for us because we like the Gucci Man song or we like the Future song, so we're going to accept that form of white supremacy, but I want to liberate myself from this other side of white supremacy because I'm hungry. We cannot have both sides. And I guarantee you, comrades and our family that's listening to us right now, if we take that one step of creating a media system that produces our story, our songs, our rhythm, our frequency, you will see conducive change in the mentality of the people. Because I've seen children that have no idea how to count correctly, can't spell their name fully, but they know entire songs. This is the reason why they use it against us, because they know that is the only way a message will be repetitively put in someone's brain if it's over a beat. Now, we have to use this strategy, and we have to take it back. We have to destroy the manipulation of the minds of our people, but we have to take it serious first. Like I said, you can't pick and choose. When you come around the conscious community, you pop back in your dead prayer CD, and when you roll off, you bump in white supremacy. Now, it's all good. We all kick back and listen to the radio sometimes, but when we're talking about nation building, we have no time to pick favorites. People either have to be for our liberation or they are against our liberation, and they have to be removed from our arena, comrades. So what we're saying here today, that anybody that has the standing ability to add to the strategy of black media production, then you need to put yourself out there and connect with other people that are in that arena. That is the whole reason why I decided to write my book, Cold Soul, which is not just one book, but part of a three-book bio series, because books are part of media as well. So I know that if I start producing my story and putting that truth inside of the media apparatus, I can encourage other people to tell their stories and inject more truth into the media arena until we can take back a chunk of it for ourselves. We have to open up the discussion and destroy the taboo. But until somebody steps up and puts in the time, effort, and work to do it, then we will continue to keep going around and around in the same circles, listening to the same lies and contradictions with a nice beat behind it, and we will get no closer to total African liberation on a global scale than we were 40 years ago with the old Vanguard Party, comrade. It's time for a change. As my good comrade Fred Hampton Jr. says, it's time to seize the time, comrades. Now is the time to seize the time and take back the minds and hearts and spirit of the people. And the music is one of the strongest methods of slavery right now. And that's the reason why the Atlanta chapter of the New Black Panther Party for Self-Defense, biggest program that we have for political education of the black community, is edutainment, educational entertainment that will reorientate the black community into their cultural consciousness through by rhythm and by the frequencies that we're most induced accept. That is the basis of it. That's the beginning. It is a small but big step towards a greater good. Now, what we need other people to do is find out what manner can they edutain their people. You can do it in any fashion that is revolutionary or conducive to conscious thought. But as long as you're doing something to dilute the white supremacy and input the reality of the African oppressive state here in America and globally, then you will be doing something more positive than what that person was already taking into their system, comrades. So I'm not saying that it would be easy, because we're dealing with something that has been intertwined into the very fabric of American culture. American culture is very music and entertainment based. So in order for us to set ourselves apart from that, we also have to have a functioning African body, a functioning nation within a nation that we have collectively worked towards this goal. So comrades, now that we've given somewhat of an outline of the current situation and we've also given some solutions that people can do right now, we still are faced with the fact of how do we get our people to accept that Nicki Minaj is not the proper role model when bubblegum lipsticks look so good. I see all the little girls now with different shades of lipsticks on and whatnot. How do we create the revolutionary culture that our people will accept? It has to be greater than and have more value of the culture that they have taken upon themselves. Any people that has no knowledge of self, they will emulate the culture that was presented to them. The only way American society has to present their culture, which is a bastardized, made-up culture over the last, so 400, 500 years that this country's been in existence. So the culture that America is projecting onto its society is the media, the music, the movies, the film industry, whatever they show and create and back up violently through laws and policies and institutionalized racism. That is the culture that our people will take and emulate amongst themselves. So now we have to present to them what culture they should emulate. We have to represent to them their culture, and we have to do it in a way that it is accepting of all different levels of our people's consciousness. Because this is a fight to take back not just the minds and hearts and body, but the spirit of African people. That is what is our greatest asset to this earth as the vicegerents, the rulers, the gods of this realm. If we do not take back what it controls our spirit, we will have no energy to manipulate any form of our body. We will have no mental energy to continue to utilize the tactics necessary to produce, to motivate, empower, and build. The spirit is the key to it all. And the thing that feeds our spirit here is our rhythmic connection to our social environment. That is the main reason why black in this country cannot disconnect themselves from the white standard version of Christianity. I said white standard version of Christianity for all the Afro-Christians on the line. That has been used specifically to indoctrinate you to a certain level of servitude. And the hardest aspect for us to disconnect ourselves from is the gospel. You won't go to church. You've held to hell with the preacher. You won't even care what he says. But as soon as that choir stands up and sings, you feel it in your spirit. Now you're like, oh, man, I might do need to put up a Christmas tree. So all I'm saying is don't underestimate the power of the music that you are allowing to be fed into your spirit. Because if you watch your own reaction to certain songs, put yourself or put someone else in that position in your analysis. Now is it serious enough for you to do something about it? Or is it still just a Nicki Minaj song? I don't know, Conrad, but I feel as though it's time for us to strategically make a move on the media system and produce our own black images and sounds before we will be dealing with a nation of zombies who know all of Jay-Z's albums. Black Power, comrades. I give thanks for the ability to speak with y'all today. And if y'all want to learn more about the analysis I have on youth and music, I have broken this down in my book, Cold Soul, Volume 1, which you can go on Amazon and put in Cold Soul, Nadia Shakur. It'll be at the top of the list. Or you can go straight to my online e-store at www.createspace-4234455. That's www.createspace/4234355. And you can order your personal copy of Cold Soul today, and you'll see what I'm talking about through my own personal analysis of using my story and how I use music throughout every single battle and obstacle that I faced in my childhood. One of the main things that helped me salvage myself out of that dunya, out of that mud, out of that state of loss and delusion was music. And I'm not going to give you a spoiler alert. I'll let you order the book for yourself. But if you can use your own history, then you'll know what I'm talking about, family. Black Power.
Black Power, Black Power. That's the national spokeswoman, New Black Panther Party, breaking it down, and she's a rapper herself. And we want to thank you so much for that. And we want to also encourage you to build more on that later in the future. We want to move quickly now into our next segment. I promised you all that our national chairman would be on, and he is on as scheduled. And he will take us further into the introduction of our guest, who I told you wrote a tell-all book, what they call a tell-all book, but an account of what really happened to Michael Jackson, a former advisor and friend of Michael Jackson. Help me to welcome to Black Power Radio our national chairman of the New Black Panther Party. This is Minister Hashim Ntinga, who will take us further. Black Power, welcome, sir.
Black Power, first I want to give honor to our God, and as always, show respect to who brought us to this point in this journey, the Honorable Dr. Khalid Muhammad, and under the strong leadership for 12 years, Attorney Malik Zulu Shabazz, and I will always have gratitude in my heart and love in my heart for those two, and thank God one is still among us and advising and working with us daily, and that was one awful 30 minutes and people just got a small feel of our national spokesman, Sister Nadia, who was on fire and will soon be able to talk very freely and to our people. I got my guest coming on now. Hold on 1 second, Brother Sean.
Okay, yes, sir. As we wait for the national.
All right, Brother Sean, I'm back.
Okay, yes, sir, go ahead.
So as I was saying, we are once again pleased and honored to be on Black Power Radio, talking to thousands of people across the country. People just don't know how powerful this radio show have gotten over the years from the hard work of people like yourself, National Chief of Staff, keeping this audience plugged in to not only Black Panther business, but current events in their local communities and national events in the country and international events all over the country. I thank God for you, Brother Sean. How you feeling tonight?
Yes, sir. I feel great, Brother Chairman. Feel great. Glad to hear your voice.
Brother, let me say this. As our Black Power audience know, we're going to always bring it. And we're learning to take our time and give more information. And I'll start acting and asking and requesting like the Honorable Dr. Khalid Muhammad used to request. And that is of our listening audience and the new Black Panther Party family and the Black Power family and our enemies. And I'm talking about the visible hand, the white man. When you come on the air on Monday and you get on Black Power Radio from 8 to 10, get you a pencil and a paper and a tablet and get ready to take some notes, because we're here to teach our people. We're here to say something and not waste our people's time and give our people something that would change their direction, change their lives, and sometimes change it that night, and sometimes gradually change it. But information is power, and from all the greats before us, we do not take this radio show lightly. We take it as an honor, not a privilege. We take it as work, not something to play with, from so many great ones. And one of the greatest was George Washington Carver, who said, if God let us be born on this earth and he bless us to be on this earth, then it's our duty to do something to change the conditions for our people while we're here. So Black Power and Black Talk Radio is going to just get tremendously better over time and tremendously more informative. And I know some people say, how can it get more informative? But we will. Brother Sean, on the next top of the hour, we're going to have a brother on. As you know, we're, as Sister Nadia was saying, we're getting into where many, many revolutionary paths have brought us. And that is, we're getting into an area where we want to talk to our young people. And we know our young people are on these radio stations listening to entertainers, Kevin Harts of the world, and the rappers of the world, but that hadn't changed. You know, we used to listen to Richard Pryce and Red Fox and Flip Wilson, and these kind of guys brought strong information to us. And then people like, we found out later, behind the great Richard Pryce was people like Paul Mooney writing some of the conscious jokes. And since Richard had the spotlight, he would bring us conscious orders. And then as we listened to the rappers of the world, we used to listen to the rappers like Gail Scott Heron. And we know he said the revolution won't be televised and it's winning in America. And on, the entertainment world has played a big role in the success and the changing of our communities and our conditions. And we can't deny it. And as you know, a couple of weeks ago, we had on Dr. Khalid Al-Mansour, who wrote the song along with Huey Newton and Bobby Seale and some Panthers in the California Bay, said loud, I'm black and I'm proud. And as you know, we made the announcement that we're finna redo that song and we're putting a black tour together. And the man who's coming on in a few minutes will be one of the people orchestrating and helping us put this tour together to travel the country and to get to these young people. Now, my experience in the entertainment world came under the leadership of Dr. Khalid Muhammad as far as the conscious area. I was with him in Riverside, California, and he was speaking to a packed house of about 1,200 people. I was so excited. And after that, he got through speaking. Behind him on stage was Ice Cube and Ice-T and our brother Wesley Snipes. And I think it was Pam Grier and some other people from L.A. who loved Dr. Collin. And after Doc spoke, he took me to the Staples Center, and we watched Ice Cube get down. And I was upset about it, as some of the people know the story. But later, Doc taught me a valuable lesson at the hotel that we talked to 1,200, and the same 1,200 come to South Central L.A. every time I come to speak. Ice Cube and us, we just talked to 17,000. And we might have sold 100 tapes that night. Ice Cube sold 3 million. And later I understood why Dr. Collin was on Scarface album, why he was on Ice Cube album, why he was on Tupac album, because we're trying to get to the young people, and sometimes we got to go to who they're listening to and work through those people to get to them. But tonight we're going to have a giant on. Let me just tell you a little bit about him. Mr. Leonard Rowe. In 1977, he was the president of the Black Promoting Association to have black promoters be able to promote big concerts. In his career, he dealt with all the giants. He dealt with Lionel Richie, Isley Brothers, Barry White, Prince, Temptations, Kenny G, Tony Braxton, R. Kelly, and the Jackson family, Janet Jackson. But one of the things that made him famous, he brought us the Budweiser tour. Back in the days, he was the first promoter to produce something that big. And under his legacy, and who worked for him, was Al Haymon. All of us know the great producer and great promoter Al Haymon. Well, he's one of the babies of the brother coming on tonight, Leonard Rowe. And we got brothers that do the Black Circus. They came under Leonard Rowe. The brothers who do the Scream Tour with Mindless Behaviors, they came under Leonard Rowe. And back in the 70s, he would fill Coliseum, but one of his biggest days that he'll tell you about is when he met Michael Jackson and Joe Jackson, and he started touring the Jackson family, and he was part of their success. And he'll be telling us about when he met Michael in 1979, and he took Michael on the Off the Wall tour, which produced the song Don't Stop Till You Get Enough, and that song came number one. And along with Leonard Rowe Promotions, the Jackson family broke Elvis Presley tour record by selling out 48 concerts. He broke every record in the world with Michael Jackson. And later, I don't want to give too much away, but later he would lose Michael Jackson to this industry. And he wrote a book called What Really Happened to Michael Jackson, The King of Pop, The Evil Side of the Entertainment Industry. And we'll let Mr. Rowe tonight talk for himself, for our young audience can understand this entertainment industry is very deadly and dangerous when it comes to African people in America once we get to a certain level of power and money. And we know about Sam Cooke, and we know about people like now Whitney Houston and others who always die in L.A. and under strange conditions. But we'll talk about all of that at the top of the hour at 9. But just to do some updates on what we got going on in the new Black Panther Party. As you know, and I don't know if you talked about it, but you probably have, just got on. We're going to be talking about the new Black Panther Party Summit that's coming up February 21st, 22nd, and 23rd. In Washington, D.C. And the reason we picked February, because we're going to be honoring Dr. Khalid Muhammad, who, as we know, we lost in February of 2001, and the great Malcolm X, El Hajj Malik Shabazz, who we lost February 21st, 1965, as he was gunned down in the Autumn Ballroom in Harlem, New York. Also, we will be celebrating the move by our Malik Zulu Shabazz, who was the national Minister of Justice in this organization for 5 years under the leadership of Dr. Khalid Muhammad, and was our national chairman for the last 12 years. And we will absolutely, absolutely give him the props that he deserved for leading this organization for 12 years through hell in North America, and through good and bad, and through all kind of ups and downs. He absolutely, on record, was the longest standing chairman ever of any Black Panther organization. And we would not sit here and not give him his props in a proper way for giving us 12 years. And now he's not off the hook, though. And now working with us as advisor and going on to construct something that he brought from a baby in the early 90s, president and founder of Black Lawyers for Justice, because as he told me and as he told our listening audience, we're finding out quickly that the criminal justice system, and we call it the criminal justice system, is taking our babies and now taking our sisters, brothers, mayors, doctors, lawyers, businessmen. They used to just paint the picture that they was coming at the brothers with their pants baggy, and we went to sleep on them because we applauded it, not the new Black Panther Party and people on this station, but others. And as we know now, they come for all levels of black people. I don't care if you're a preacher, you're not safe, because there's a conspiracy out here with the criminal justice system to destroy all the progress that we made. And it was absolutely a backlash from getting the first black president of the United States and the first black attorney general to deem them powerless in those positions. But we're going to see, can we change that? And I know Attorney Shabazz is going to play a big role. But one of the things, Brother Sean, we're going to be doing in the new Black Panther Party, and we're going to, as all members in good standing know, we're going to have a summit to reorganize, revisit where we need to be at this time in history, revisit what worked, what didn't work, what we should renew. As any CEO or anybody that's running any kind of organization, we got to look, put on the table what worked, what didn't work, what helped us and what didn't help us. And one of the things we're going to do is go over and start back with our political classes and teaching, because I'm finding out more and more that most people don't know the history of the new Black Panther Party, don't know the history of the original Black Panther Party, don't know the history of the black struggle in America. And that's dangerous, because all of this is our foundation to keep fighting. And I was just looking over some stuff that I wanted to let people know that we're going to be teaching so hard and so much. I'll never forget the Illinois governor, Otto Corner. A lot of people don't know who that is, the governor of Illinois back in the 60s, Otto Corner. But if you remember, Brother Sean, who that is, that was the person that was put over what they called the Corners Commission. In 1969, President Johnson put him over a commission. And that commission had two blacks. It had 9 members, but 2 were black. NAAC President Roy Wilkins and a black senator from Boston, Massachusetts called Edward Brooks. And that commission was to go over America and see, was it getting better where black and whites were involved in the relationship between black and white. And after a year of study, that Corners Commission came back after all the marches, after all the bills passed, the Civil Rights Bill, the Voting Rights Bill, the Separate but Equal, the Brown versus the Board of Education, all of the bills that so many civic organizations worked on to make America closer and give blacks a better chance in this society. That Corners Commission came out and said that America is more divided, increasingly separate and scarily scarily less equal for blacks. And then they brought it back 30 years later and did another study, and it came up with the same results, that this society is less equal and unequal to black people in America. But we also going to be at that summit on one of the days. We're going to be giving the history of the Black Power Movement, Brother Sean, and I think people should come. We're going to get a history of the summer of 1966 in Mississippi when Brother Stokely Carmichael and our Baba Mikasa Rick and H. Ralph Brown made that great thundering sound, Black Power, Black Power, when they were with Dr. King doing the march against fear because our brother was shot for trying to get into Jackson, one of the Mississippi schools, and they shot him on his march, and they had to go back and march again, and they were attacked, and Stokely Carmichael and Mikasa Rick got to get up there and say Black Power next to Dr. King and the Civil Rights Movement. And on that day in 66 in Mississippi, that Black Power cry came to replace the Civil Rights cry, which was Freedom Now. And then great people like Jane Brown and Harry Belafonte and comedian Dick Gregory started talking, and Congressman Adam Clayton Powell started talking about Black is Beautiful. And as you know, out of that came Bobby Seals and people like Huey Newton and Angela Davis and Elders Cleaver and Bobby Huffton, and in came what we call now the original Black Panther Party. But we got to remember a lot of history is involved in this original Black Panther Party. We got to remember in the original party, Stokely Carmichael was the prime minister. H. Ralph Brown was the Minister of Justice. James Farmer was the Minister of Foreign Affairs. But unfortunately, because of differences, they resigned from the original party. And a lot of people don't know the history. They don't know why Stokely Carmichael, why H. Ralph Brown and those guys left the party, which really they had formed in Lyons County before the Oakland Group. But we'll leave that alone until the summit. But anyway, if you go and study history, you'll find out that Stokely Carmichael and them guys resigned because they were against the alliance with the white radicals. And Stokely claimed that being in bed with the white radicals, the white people would subserve the new black, the Panther Party, and the blacks would be put over the whites. And he would have no dealings with that. And, man, this party, the original party, has so much history, man, that's so unique and need to be studied. And we need to understand there were so many people against the original party, but there were so many people who understood it. Like in 1969, July, when the plot started to thicken on the assassination and the murder of Fred Hampton, the chairman of Chicago, they start setting the plot in July, having police officers stop him and act like he had a sawed-off shotgun. But by December of 69, we know they did a pre-done raid on Fred Hampton's house and assassinated Fred Hampton and our brother Mark Clark, and then put seven other Panthers in the house that's not talked about that often, including Sister Njeri, the mother of Fred Hampton Jr. And Fred Hampton Jr., of course, was at that time in his mom's stomach in the bed next to his dad, who they assassinated. But those seven others, do people know their names? Do they know what happened? Well, we're going to tell you what happened. I'll give you a little teaser. A national commission was put together of nine people, nine black commissioners, and one of them was the NAACP president, Roy Wilkins, who led the case that J. Edgar Hoover had illegally moved on Fred Hampton and Mark Clark, and had those seven people charged with criminal charges of attacking the police, wrongly accused them. And the history goes down that Roy Wilkins and that commission was right, and other black leaders got on the bandwagon, and those seven others, just like we are today, was proven innocent, And those criminal charges was dropped on those seven people. And Sister and Jerry went on to sue the FBI for killing Fred and others, Mark Clark, on that day. And we have to talk about different things that we don't like to talk about, but we got to talk about the sabotage. And we got to talk about how we deal with history that brings us to how we got to deal with the future. We got to talk about the Panthers of 1971, which we hate to talk about. The split between Elder Cleaver, Huey Newton, David Hilda, and Bobby Seals. When Elder Cleaver split with them over the California group, Huey Newton and Bobby Seals and David Hilda, expelling what they had called the New York 21. And when they expelled the New York 21, Elder Cleaver split, started his own party, and brought the New York 21 back up in good standings. And we know the history of that, him going to Africa and on, and we know it's just so much to deal with. But we got to deal with J. Edgar Hoover and the history of J. Edgar Hoover to make everybody understand what happened then and what's happening now. But on that note, I'll say this. I'm looking forward to a national Black Power Summit in D.C. February, and I'm looking forward to making our people know that we have a chance to rewrite history. But first, we have to go over the history that's already been written. Another thing, we only got a minute before I reach for our guest. Next week, we will have a national CEO of Black Lawyers for Justice on. We will do a overview about 2013 and what the new Black Panther Party got accomplished in 2013. We will go down the list. The former chairman and our advisor, Attorney Malik Zulu Shabazz, will be one of our guests. And you know, Brother Sean, one of the first lectures I did after getting out of jail with the Zimmerman situation, I went to Texas and I did a lecture called "Are We Still Slaves? And If We Are, Who Is the Slave Master?" Well, we're going to be dealing with that next week and dealing with the Sudan and how American Navy SEALs are landing in Africa again. And we got to expose what's behind the scene. And we're going to get our still Congresswoman, Cynthia McKinney, on to talk about how America moves. As we know, when they moved on her and put the conspiracy together in Atlanta to move her from her Congress seat, she would have been a 13-year senior Congresswoman. And when they moved on her, that's because she was going to be on the Arms Committee because she had enough years. We so damn silly, we done sent a rookie congressman in her place who has no years. And Sister Cynthia McKinney, in her position of 13 years as a congresswoman, would have had power to vote to help slant some of the moves that America is making with its military in Africa. Now it's 9 o'clock, so let me take a minute to go and grab our guests and bring them back. Brother Sean, you can take over until we get them on.
Okay, yes, sir. I'm here. The number to call, brothers and sisters, will be 646-478-4447.
Would you leave
your
key?
646-478-4447. We are talking to the national chairman of the New Black Panther Party, the self-defense minister, Hashim Nzinga. He will be joined by Mr. Michael Rowe. He'll be joined here in just a few minutes by a former advisor and a former friend, of that great entertainer and that great celebrity, Michael Jackson. We're talking about evil side of entertainment industry and the Jewish hand, the evil side of the entertainment industry and the Jewish hand. Pardon me, I said Michael Rowe. Mr. Leonard Rowe. I was going to say Michael Jackson. We'll be joined by Mr. Leonard Rowe in a few moments, and he'll talk about his book and his travels and his experiences. This is one not to miss, as they all are not, and we want to give you an opportunity to ask some questions, ask questions about his time with Michael Jackson. Ask him questions about his experiences. Ask about what's really going on in the entertainment industry. Is it entertainment today? Is it corporate? What's really going on? Should we send our boys and girls to that field? And what should we do? How do we survive? How do we get our talents exposed in a way to where they are not exploited? Look at what happened to MC Hammer, bankrupt. Look at what happened to TLC, bankrupt. Now look at what happened to Mike Tyson. He lost money, and they're bankrupt. We got to talk about that. Millionaires, many more, millionaires, big million-dollar contracts, and by the time they come out of their contract, many of them almost don't have a penny to their name. The entertainer and guitarist Santana just reunited with his guitarist. I was reading the other day, just reunited when he found his guitarist on the street as a bum, his former guitarist on the street living down there homeless, and he reunited with him and has put him on board. So we got to talk about this. How do we not allow our young boys and girls and those with talent to be pimped out, turned out, or told they're ugly, like in the case of the Little Kims and the Michaels, and those who destroy their noses and bleach their skin? And we know that Michael had a skin condition. We're talking about those who, you know, work to be white and imitate the whiteness. Y'all know what I'm talking about. All of this in the entertainment field and entertainment industry, and then how do we turn this thing around so that as we can do, as E.P. Newton talked about it, we can produce some positive black male images. How do we produce positive black male and black female images for 2014, and how do we make these images and these pictures have mass appeal to our people? And that is the fight. That's the fight for all of you conscious artists out there, and you those of you who can draw. Black Power, you back, sir?
Yes, sir. Right now, Brother Leonard Rowe was coming in from Columbus, Georgia, bringing his mother into Georgia. He'll be on in a minute, but we got two guests we're going to have on tonight. One of them I got on now, Brother Mark, which is a Conrad of Brother Leonard Rowe, who's been behind the scenes in the music industry and in the entertainment industry for years, brought us and started to put together some of the first early, what they call reality shows in the industry and understands the industry. And now has got on the other side to help defend and start to help put together cases against this industry, which is punishing our people for being successful. And I want the listening audience to know this brother is a brother who's been solid on the ground for a long, long time in the industry. Brother Mark, we've been talking about the industry, the music industry, the TV industry, and tonight we wanted to bring you and Brother Leonard Rowe on to talk about this industry and how it has absolutely been destructive of the Black Power movement to use us in a way against each other after we get so powerful in this industry, how they control it, take it, and use the courtroom judges to take our power. And mostly, as we know, if you talk about Ron Isley, you got to talk about the RS. If you talk about Fred Sanford, you got to talk about the RS. If you talk about Richard Pryor, you got to talk about the RS. I don't care if it's Nat King Cole, who gave them a white Christmas, RS, the Isley brothers, RS, any of our people, they always have different branches of this government that comes in once we get to a certain level of power and we end up dying broke. Brother Mark, I just want you to talk about some of the things that you and Mr. Rowe have been doing, and some of the things that you watched him go through before he get on personally, and some of the things you done went through and had to absolutely take it to the streets and then end up in the courtrooms. And I want our people to feel hope. And sometimes our people feel hopeless in this system. But I want you to talk tonight about how successful you've been and your Conrad who's coming up and other Conrads, and some of the tools that we got that they've been using for years on us that now we're savvy to use ourselves. Brother Mark, welcome to Black Talk Radio. Our host, Brother Sean Kwali, the National Chief of Staff of the New Black Panther Party, and you know I'm Brother Hashim and Zinga, the chairman. Welcome.
Thank you for having me, Hashim. You know, I don't even know where to begin because I've been through so much and I've seen so much over the past 20 years in the industry. You know, I started out in the late 80s in this game, and, you know, I worked with Dr. Dre, I worked with Russell Simmons, I've done business with just about every record company that there is, from Island to Def Jam to Sony to BMG to Tommy Boy, and, you know, it's the same old story every time when it comes to people of color. One of the interesting things that you'll find about the record industry is that you don't hear stories of the country and Western artists winding up in the same predicament as the African-American artists or the black artists. You don't hear that many stories of the rock bands. Like, let's take the Rolling Stones, for instance. Everyone knows that they've been getting high since the 60s. You know what I mean? But they're still extremely wealthy. You know, the same thing with David Bowie's and some of these other groups. And, you know, Mr. Rowe and I, we always try to look at the reason why this is. Here you have Michael Jackson die poor, and you have Mick Jagger, you know, who's, I don't know if he still does drugs, who's known for doing drugs, is as rich as he can be. So it doesn't turn out that way normally unless there's some sort of shenanigans going on behind the scenes to deliberately derail the African-American artist and, you know, to support the other artist, you know, when they're going through their addiction or whatever it may be. You know what I mean?
Yes, sir.
And I mean, is there some? I really don't like to talk a lot.
Let me just give some credentials. Brother Mark has been in the University of Georgia, and now he's on the Harvard campus. And what led him to those campuses is the courtrooms of America. He finds, and you'll hear from Leonard Rowe shortly, he finds us in the courtroom more than we're in the banks, more than we're with our CPAs, more than we're with our investments. Every time blacks get a certain amount of money, America seems to figure a way to take it or to control the blacks. And we're going to have to mention the word Jews, because when we get into this situation in a minute, we're going to be talking about the seven different Jewish organization that control black America in the entertainment world, and the New Black Panther Party has not been and will never not be afraid to talk about the truth and what controls black entertainers. And we're going to talk about that tonight, very frank and very bold. I don't give a damn about no ADL or no JDL. And I don't give a damn about them writing tomorrow that we anti-Semitic when we know they anti-Kemetic and when they love to hide from the truth. Brother Mark, I just want to say, first of all, I really want to say I appreciate you having the courage to get in the courtrooms and fight against the other group that these people totally control, which is the judges and the DAs of the country that punish us for being successful. Can you talk a little bit about the courtrooms and what you're finding out from your Harvard ventures now? And your University of Georgia ventures, and why did you end up at the University of Georgia and Harvard, and how you had to go and learn something from the inside of those schools to defend yourself in the courtrooms and some of the tools you use?
Yeah, I have an article that recently came out in Bloomberg Magazine, actually last week, about the litigation that I was involved in. And throughout the whole litigation, I think I went through something like 11 lawyers, and I would always wind up in the same predicament. I went through 11 lawyers and 6 judges. So I decided that I was going to sue these individuals myself without using a lawyer. And 1 month into the lawsuit that I brought against these individuals without using a lawyer, my case was essentially over. They never responded, and they were supposed to be placed in default. And the judge ignored their default and just let them slide. And there were several different things that took place that made me say, you know what, maybe there's something that I'm missing about the law. I need to go to school and get certified as a paralegal. So I went to University of Georgia's paralegal program, and then I got a certification in advanced legal research and writing. And this is where the whole thing started to make sense to me, that there was some serious corruption going on inside the courts. Now, I've never had any dealings with the courts prior to that, you know, except for maybe a ticket here or there. You know, I've never been in trouble with the law or anything of that nature. So I went to UGA, became a paralegal. I came out, and when the companies that I was suing realized that I had my paralegal certification, they settled with me within 2 days because they knew at that point I could go on and on and on and on and continue this battle. I had the heart, you know, I had the courage, I just didn't have the knowledge. And sometimes, you know, I've come to learn that a lot of the attorneys, unfortunately, that we may go to either don't have the knowledge or they're afraid to exercise their right against these folks to use the knowledge, or they are sometimes in a conspiracy. They would much rather be friends with these folks than, you know, stand up for me. Let me give you a case in point. If you're an attorney and you have 5 clients and you go, let's say, to Sony Music and you have 3 clients with Sony Music and Sony Music asks you to throw one of them under the bus and they'll give you a deal for a new client, that one guy is going under the bus. That's just the way it is. And a lot of times we don't have the knowledge or the education to defend ourselves, and we wind up getting ran over by the bus. One of the things that I realize, and I hear people say it all the time, education is key. Well, it really is, because when they realized that I was now a paralegal, they threw in the towel and they cut me a check. And that prompted me to go on to Harvard University. I said, well, if they act like this about UGA, I might as well go on to Harvard. And I started taking some classes at Harvard, and then that's when I really realized the extent of the corruption in the courts, and I decided to take action and sue the lawyers who did what they did to me. And right now I'm involved in 2 separate cases with a total of 19 lawyers, and I've just obtained copies of the judge's surety bonds, and I might as well get ready to add another probably 3 or 4 lawyers when I bring an action against the surety bond of the judges. What a lot of people don't understand or don't know is that if you're aggrieved by a judge or mistreated by any public official, there is a recourse. They are all bonded. They must have a bond before they take their position working in the public sector. When they're sworn in, they also have a bond. And the bond is required of them just like car auto insurance is required of a person with a vehicle. And if you drive down the street and you're driving reckless and you run into someone's car, either by mistake or deliberately or whatever, they can bring an action against you and your insurance company for you to pay for their damages, the damages in which they have incurred. Well, it's the same thing with the judges and the bonds. When a judge is reckless or a judge is dishonest or a judge errors in his judgment and his rulings, and the appellate court does the same, you have a recourse, and it's called a surety bond. So, and one of the things is when you bring an action against the surety bond, the judge, he cannot work. He comes off of that bench, or he must, he becomes high risk, and his bond is pretty much extinguished. And when the bond is extinguished, he has to pay a much higher premium. Now, let's say the premium was $10,000 to cover this individual, and now his bond is extinguished. It may be $50,000. So either he will have to pay the $50,000, or he's going to have to take the $50,000 from some area inside the government. And at that point, it becomes really touch and go, because you'd be a lot better off just getting another judge and saving the taxpayers money and replacing that judge and putting someone in their spot for that $10,000 premium and save the taxpayers some money. It's a tactic that you will never get a lawyer to agree with, because these lawyers know that that is a career-ending move for them. But as a paralegal and as a pro se who's fighting for what is right, I could care less. I have to do what works for me. And I think that if more people utilize this option, you would see the courts. Well, I don't even think you'd see anything happen in the courts. They would change the rules and they would change the law so they could keep the upper hand and continue with their nonsense before they allow, a bunch of people to bring action against these surety bonds. The other thing is the commercial liens. My colleague, Leonard Rowe, is really well-versed in that area, and that is the showstopper of them all. I mean, if you want to see some judges and some lawyers get to hopping, go after their bond or go after them with the intention of placing a commercial lien. But let me say this. Before you go after any public official, including a judge with a commercial lien, you must be 150% in the right, because they will lock you up for a felony. It is a felony in the state of Georgia to bring an action, a fraudulent lien against any public official. So, I mean, that's what I've been doing. I mean, the game is ugly, and I tell people this all the time. When the music business is good to you, it's bad. When it's bad, I don't know what it is. It's something from another planet. even when it's good, it's bad. And I hope and pray that my children don't want any part of the music business. One thing I will say is, had it not been for the music business, I would have not have gone to UGA, and I wouldn't have gone to Harvard. It was my role in the music business that led me to those institutions. So when I say the music is good, you know what I mean? It's the politics and the people that run it that are bad. So let me just say that.
Well, I'll say this, brother. You said a mouthful when you said, attorneys are afraid to use these tactics, but in your studies, and I know, and the reason you're on this show is because I do not even deal with people no more who don't do research and who I don't care if you're a fourth grade education or a paralegal or the best lawyer in the world. I don't deal with anybody at this point at 51 and the troubles our people got that I know that's not well-versed and know what in the hell are they doing and talking about. But let me ask you this, Brother Mark. In your journey, and I know now every time I talk to you, you're in the law library. I mean, it don't make no difference what time it is. You are in the law library. And as you know, and you've been here at our law library, and you've been with our former chairman, Attorney Malik Gushabaz, and, you know, now he's moved over to run the Black Lawyers for Justice. And soon as he moved over to run his baby, who was born in the 90s, Black Lawyers for Justice, and you can go to Black Lawyers for Justice, www.blfjustice.org to find out what Attorney Shabazz is doing now. First thing he did was wrote a book that I gave you, What People Need to Know When Dealing with the Police. And I think we're going to find ourselves now, even when the NAACP started in the Urban League in 1901, 1906, until they got the branch of the legal defense with Charles Hampton Houston and started taking white people into courts and suing them for their property and breaking them to their knees in the courtroom, we wasn't making progress. And as we know, with Rodney King, the people got off. We had to get the progress in the courtroom. But the criminal side has not proved to work for us at all against our enemy, but the civil lawsuits have made us rich. But I'm glad you're one of the few who won a hell of a judgment and is on your way to win another one. Yeah. But you stick with the Cynthia McKinney's of the world. You stick with the revolutionaries of the world, and that's why me and you've been friends. And right now you're helping me finish out my lawsuit, which we will be talking on this show about soon. But at this moment, we wanted to try to get Mr. Rowe on at the top of 9:30. I try to let you go get him while let our host.
Can I say one other thing?
Sure you can.
I was inspired to create, and I want to use this to support the Black Lawyers for Justice. I want to create Black Paralegals for Justice so that the attorneys, right, who donate their services, Black Lawyers for Justice, can have a backroom support staff of paralegals who are willing and ready to step up for whatever cause it is that they're fighting. Because, you know, sometimes to wage these wars, it takes a lot of research, it takes a lot of manpower, and it takes a lot of time. And, you know, a lawyer, he needs an army of attorneys if he really wants to be an army of paralegals, I'm sorry, if he wants to be really efficient. And that's what I'm looking to build in support so it can shadow Black Lawyers for Justice. I want to put together a team of paralegals that does the same thing so it can assist you guys in what y'all are doing.
I know Attorney Shabazz, hopefully, I know he's working at the law office tonight. Maybe he's listening, but I know he'll be calling you on that, and getting over on that side where he can spend more time in his law office and getting prepared with the Black Lawyers for Justice. This has been a breath of fresh air for you to say it made you move on the Black Paralegals. I know he's going to enjoy that. And for the new Black Panther Party on the line, once you start learning about Bobby Seals when he was in that courtroom gagged and tied to that chair, he was fighting to get the right attorney because his attorney had to have an operation, and they wanted to go on with the case with any kind of attorney. And as you said today, Brother Mark, you got to have a revolutionary attorney to fight these people. And so Bobby Seals was gagged and was given all kind of counts and about to get 7 years when he was in Chicago fighting conspiracy. And he wanted the right attorney, but the attorney got sick, and he wanted them to hold off till his attorney got back, and they tried to force him to have an attorney that wasn't for him. And it was amazing that the five people that was with him, they were let off, but they still tried to charge Bobby Seals. But, of course, the attorney came back. Bobby beat the case, And as we know, even with Jonathan Jackson and George Jackson, they killed George, and they had those three on charges of killing a guard, but people don't want to talk about why Angela Davis was in court. They dropped the charges on George Jackson, two co-offendants, and if they wouldn't have assassinated George, the charges would have been dropped on him too. So in this revolutionary world, lawyers are very important, and as we know, Angela Davis, when they got her on her conspiracy charges, she used a black attorney out of Atlanta and a black attorney out of L.A., and they kicked butt. And for them, she probably would have got the death penalty. So we know on this Black Power Radio how important paralegals and how important good attorneys is, because behind all the attorneys we name it, they had paralegals researching, bringing up the right cases. So if you try to get our godfather on, Leonard Rowe, we'll keep going until you get back on. And when you get back, we'll let Mr. Rowe kick right in.
Okay.
Brother Sean.
Yes, sir, I'm here.
Brother, this is what you call Black Power Radio.
Absolutely. Black and powerful.
Yeah, I think Brother Rowe, when Mark come back on, we'll go ahead and, once again, for people just tuning in, Leonard Rowe wrote a book, What Really Happened to Michael Jackson, The King of Pop, The Evil Side of the Entertainment Industry. He'll be on to talk with us. One of the biggest black show promoters ever in black history. Did Michael Jackson major tours, off-the-wall tours, and when they used to fill up them big arenas. And he'll get on here talking about everybody from Barry White to Isaac Hayes to Jane Brown. Started in the industry when he was 23 years old out of Columbus, Georgia. Done put great, great black promoters to work who's still working and some of the biggest ones out. And Leonard Rowe is in the middle of a $100 million lawsuit against a bunch of Jewish agencies that I want him to come on and talk about. He's very hard to keep up with, and hopefully we done got him. I talked to him earlier. He was trying to make it back to Atlanta to get on the show. And I just tell you this, he understood that AEG, these were the last contractors with Michael Jackson. And one of the excerpts from his book, Brother Sean, he said AEG had a contract with Michael that was a cocked financial gun pointed at his head. And you'll never hear nobody like Leonard Rowe break down this industry like you're here tonight. And, you know, it's the holiday season and everything, but if we can't catch him, we'll get him on in the future. But he just was a big part of well, I can't even talk about that yet. There's so much go on in the courtroom that you can't talk about, but we'll talk about what we can. But Leonard will be talking about the double standards in the industry. People like William Morris and Howard Rose agencies and creative artists agencies, and break down who all of these agencies are and how they totally control our black millionaire and billionaire artists, from Jay-Z to Beyonce to whoever we want to talk about. And as our national spokesman was talking about earlier, was talking about her book and this conversation is going to go by why the public enemies got pushed out the limelight, and why dead prayers get pushed out the limelight, and why the last poets get pushed out the limelight, and why we can't have the revolutionary conscious rappers, conscious singers around no more, how this industry changed to the point where the Gil Scott Herons, you can't even get a contract out here. And the other thing we're going to end up talking about is why are we still begging these people to give us contracts when they're not the writers, they're only the promoters, they're not the writers, they're not the beat makers, they're not the singers, they're not the rappers. We are. And at some point, we're going to have to let this daddy, this master, go and do for ourselves what we should have been doing. You know, and one of the true revolutionaries in entertainment was the great Muhammad Ali. And I tell everybody in our listening audience to go get the new bio on how the 9 Supreme Court justices stopped Ali from going to jail for not joining the white man's army, and how they used Elijah Muhammad's black message to the black man and the Quran to give Ali the same privilege that they had gave the Jehovah Witnesses. And the Jehovah Witnesses writing, it said that a Jehovah Witness do not have to serve in the United States Army to fight. The Jehovah Witness only fight when it's basically a holy war, when they God tell them to fight. And as we know, Muhammad Ali said he wasn't going to fight no people who never done nothing to him, and the only fight he would fight is if God told him to fight, and they tried to send him to prison, and he beat it in the Supreme Court, and they got the documentary out today on how he stood up, lost tons of money, but stuck with his guns, and revolutionary how some of the Jim Browns and the other great athletes and entertainers started to stand up with Ali, started that revolutionary move in the entertainment industry, as we call it. Brother Mark, are you back? Brother Sean, you still there?
Yes, sir, I'm still here.
Well, as we wait on him to come back, we just want to recap for people who are just tuning in. We're going to have our former national chairman, Attorney Malik Shabazz, on next week doing a recap of 2013 and the year of 2013 for the new Black Panther Party, and also going into our February summit. And we're going to be updating. People can start going back to the website after the night, Sean, and we're going to start updating things on the website. In between this show and the website, we're going to start moving this train again and getting back on track so we can go fight for our people. Let me make sure I haven't lost Mark on the other end. 1 second. You can take over, Brother Sean.
Okay, sir. Yes, sir, because you're listening to National Chairman of the New Black Panther Party for Self-Defense, Minister Hashim Nzinga. We are talking live right now to Brother Mark, who has worked with Tommy Boy, Dr. Dre, and other heavyweights in the music industry. And we're also planning to hear from Sir Leonard Rowe, another industry great, legendary, great friend and advisor to the great Michael Jackson. So it's a beautiful show tonight, and you're tuned in. We're thankful that you're here with us. And if you have questions that you want to ask to our guest tonight, the number to call is 646-478-4447. Again, that's 646-478-4447. As we're talking about the evil side of the music entertainment business or the entertainment industry, and also exposing the Jewish hidden hand behind the scenes on our entertainers and rappers, as I pointed out, what happened with Kanye West and so many others. And so we're on live tonight. We're in the Hells and Smells of North America, bringing you this truth so that you out there, the youth, and those of you who are aspiring artists and rappers, entertainers, and those of you who have talent, so that you're not used and abused, and that you don't sign no funny contract that has you later down the road scratching your head and picking up your pennies. And so this is the truth hour. And as we say, don't touch that dial. We'll be black at you. We're just waiting to bring Brother Mark back to the show. I think his line had fallen off as he was explaining his travels and what he has done in the music industry. And we are blessing the New Black Panther Party to enjoy these kinds of relationships. To the chagrin of our enemies, we enjoy very lofty relationships with those in high stations in life and low stations in life. And so we appreciate that, and we're glad to have them on. Brother Chairman, are you back with us?
Yeah, I'm back with you, and I just wanted to say, it's so funny dealing with Leonard Rowe. He's, man, there's never no telling who this man is talking to. You know, he toured Prince, R. Kelly, and just to update the listening audience, he's going to call us in about 2 minutes. But just to update Black Power Radio listening audience, what we're putting together, and you'll see it unfold, is we're putting together a Black Power tour, and by the summer of 2014, we're going to be doing some fantastic things in the New Black Panther Party on the political side with the National Conference of Black Mayors, in the streets with our people and our comrades, in Africa, joining the Black Lawyers for Justice and Attorney Malik Shabazz and some others, and
also in the entertainment world where most of our young people's ears are hanging out. And between the politicians, the revolutionary front, the entertainment segment, and the international segment, we're going to bring some change, and we're going to keep straight ahead. I know there's been some bumps in the road, but guess what? They call bumps in the road. And what do you do when you're in a car? You go over the bump in the road, but you keep moving. You don't stop the car. Brother Sean, I want to say this. I was on a conference call earlier this week with the New Black Panther Party, and it excited me so much to hear so many chairmen of cities and so many active and in good standing Panthers be so excited about our future and getting ready to come to the summit, and so many texts and emails that's coming across the national desk. And I think we really, 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 after all the suffering of Dr. Khalid Muhammad and all the excitement of Dr. Khalid Muhammad, I'm sitting here, as I always say, looking at a picture of Dr. Khalid and CeeLo getting ready for the 1998 Million Youth March and gift from Goody Mob. We've always been around these artists. Matter of fact, CeeLo, 8-Ball, and all these guys, they wrote songs for the original Million Youth March, and they wanted to come together and do a compilation for the Million More Movement. We got Erykah Badu to lead that. So us talking about the entertainment world is nothing new, knowing that Master P almost single-handedly with, no, we can't say single-handedly, but with the help of Cedric the Entertainer, Steve Harvey, and many, many others, helped. And there's so many people throughout the black nation that knows that the entertainment world has came to the rescue of a lot of revolutionaries. I'm talking about T.I., Luda, Brother Shaka over there, Brother Jason Jeter. I'm talking about Russell Simmons himself. I'm talking about Shaquille O'Neal. So we can never, as revolutionaries, not use every option as a general to fight this battle, because at the end of the day, we're trying to get to the masses of our people. And as we know, this social media, this Facebook and this Twitter and all of this, Lil Boosie and the Jay-Z's of the world get 10 million hits. And we need to talk to those 10 million people. And let me let you go back to what you're doing, and I'm going to grab Brother Leonard Rowe again.
Yes, sir. Once again, this is a live preparing to hear from Brother Leonard Rowe, the personal advisor, friend to the great singer, artist, songwriter, entrepreneur, businessman, Michael Jackson. May he rest in peace. And you've been with us hearing from Brother Mark and the great industry greats, and you all know how we do it. You know, we're no strangers to this. You know, we had Brother Button B on the show not long ago and had the great from Rap-A-Lot Records on, Brother Jay Prince on, and so many others. You know, we're not strangers to this at all. We want to encourage you artists out there to put revolution in your lyrics, rap revolutionary lyrics or positive lyrics, positive artistry that will steer your generation into a better future and give them the example on what to do and what to fight for. And we want the elders out there to encourage the young to do this and to put the music where it needs to go. Elders, encourage the young, and young, take your rightful position as the voice of this generation. And so to ask questions to our guests as they prepare to come on, again, at 646-478-4447, 646-478-4447. I'm your co-host here, Sean Saddam Kweli. I'm on live, the National Chairman of the New Black Panther Party for Self-Defense, Minister Hashim Nzinga. And this is Black Power Radio. And so, like I say, we're just trying to get the brother on, and he'll be on in a second. This is what happens when you're at live radio. You get these brothers that got to call in, and they get clicked off and that and whatnot. But we want to take your call. We want you all who are in the queue to just be patient, as we want to make sure our brother gets on and gets a chance to be heard, as he has been in traffic and in transit. He was coming from Columbus, Georgia. I believe Columbus, Georgia. And so be patient. We want him to be heard. We want you to be heard as well. And so it's Monday night, Black Power, entertainment at its best. Hey, Sheldon, you back?
Yes, but we waiting on Mr. Rowe to mark this for me. He's calling now, so we just rolling, bro. We doing what we do, and hopefully our audience is getting a lot out of this. Brother Mark is dynamic. Believe me, you're going to hear a lot about him in the future. I hate that I can't announce how much he won on his own in that courtroom, but it was in the millions. And some of the cases that Leonard Rowe and others will be talking about, hundreds of millions of dollars that we're taking back in reparations, that's what I call it. But they're going to teach us how to go in these courtrooms. And believe me, when you start messing with these crackers' money, they bag their ass off of you. When you start taking judges off the bench, they bag your ass off of you. When you start taking DA's bonds and they can't practice law and going to where they go on Arthur Maddox and where they go on our great lawyers and disbar them for their corruption, they bag the hell off of you. I'm tired of us always being on the defensive. And we know, like I just went through in DeKalb County, a total, total scam, a total, total sabotage, a total, total disrespectful arrest that they put it all over the world on CNN and Fox like I was this terrorist and this villain. But when it's time to go to court, Attorney Malik Nuchibaz and Brother Mawali Davis and Bozeman Law Firm bagged DeKalb County down where they didn't even want to go in the courtroom, just dropped all the charges. And y'all will be hearing about people like that paralegal that's on tonight and others as we get this check from DeKalb County for trying to destroy my life illegally. Hold on, let me grab them now, Brother Sharon, because this is a very important show. Keep your pencils sharp. Wish we had 4 hours instead of two.
Oh, yes, sir. We're going to work on it. We definitely want to expand Black Power Radio. We want to bring Black Power Radio to your areas, too. So, you brothers and sisters, in the near future, we want to be right there in your living room, in your city, in your town, broadcasting live wherever you are with the great artists and the great entertainers and people that are in your neighborhoods. We'll get that to you. I also want to make it available for you to know that we have a new Black Panther Party mixtape on the way for the you artists who are out there and want to participate with the new Black Panther Party mixtape. Email us at newblackpantherheadquarters@gmail.com. One more time, newblackpantherheadquarters@gmail.com to send your submissions for the new Black Panther Party mixtape that will be distributed worldwide. And it's going to be a banger. With all this heat we got, you already know it's going to be a banger. So get involved with it. And let's show these artists how to do it. Let's show this corporate hip-hop how to do it. Take it back to where it belongs, right back on the square. A lot of talent out there, too. My brother Abdul looking at me like he ready to get involved with that. Definitely. So that's New Black Panther Party mixtape.
Brother Sean.
Yes, sir.
We done talked about the man all night and all day. I'm glad to bring to our Black Power listening audience our Conrad, the 1977 president of Black Promoters Association, the man who taught most of these young black promoters out here how to make this money and share the pot. And I'm just so happy to have Leonard Rowe. And Leonard, I'm going to start with asking you one question, and you can go from there. You got a call, and this call from reading your book changed your life. This call came to you about 3:30, June 25th. I'm the brother of Michael Jackson, Randy Jackson, and you heard that you had lost one of your best friends in the world, and then you got a call later from his mother, Catherine, telling you to get to L.A., and you had just left L.A. in your book, and you were spending a couple of days at home, and you was going back to L.A. to help your young friend, Michael Jackson, deal with a company called AEG and to watch his back. Welcome to Black Talk Radio. You're on. Brother Rowe? Brother Rowe? Brother Sean, are we still on?
Yes, sir. We're still on, Bishop.
Well, it shows Brother Roe is on. I don't
Hello.
Know. Oh.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, sir. Did you hear my introduction, Brother Roe?
Yes, I did. I heard it.
Now we'll let you know you my main man, and ain't no use to us going into that with 15 minutes left. Mr. Rowe, everybody on the air know about your book, What Really Happened to Michael Jackson, The King of Pop, The Evil Side of the Industry. And I was just, man, it brings me to my knees when I'll be reading you riding around in Atlanta taking care of business, thinking you're finna fly back out to L.A. and be with your young friend and our young friend, Michael Jackson, and you get a call from Randy. And all of a sudden, Catherine is telling you to get back to L.A. Can you just talk about your history and anything you want? Our audience is yours.
Well, like you just said, it was a heck of a day. You know, I've worked with Michael Jackson for off and on for the past 30 years. And he had called me and asked me to come out to deal with his business and his finances concerning this London run. And when I went to L.A. and found out, I had the opportunity to see what was happening to him. It was totally discouraging to me, I might say, because he was being taken advantage of. And I also knew at the time that his demise was coming. And I tried my best, to warn not only him, but his relatives of what I saw happening to him. But it was a little too late. No one would actually believe what I was saying, or they didn't want to believe what I was saying. But to make a long story short, what they'd done to Michael Jackson was all a part of a plan. It did not happen like they want you to think it happened, just coincidentally. It was a plan to destroy Michael Jackson. As harsh as it may sound, is the truth. Michael Jackson was an African-American man that owned something that the entertainment industry wanted no black person to own, and that was his publishing catalog, which was, to my knowledge, the biggest catalog owned by any individual in the world. He owned half of Sony Music, which included thousands and thousands of songs. And for those that's not with what publishing is the biggest part of the music industry. That's the part of the music industry that never disappears. As long as you live, and as long as those songs are being played, you continue to make money. And if you die, your next of kin or whoever you leave the publishing to continues to make money. But the entertainment industry is a highly racist industry. It's one of the most racist industries still existing in America today, and people don't know that. So, you know, not to take up much of your time, because I know your time is limited here. What happened to Michael Jackson should never happen to an individual in this country, especially because of his race. And still to this day, I suggest that people get together. We, as not only African Americans, but all people of righteousness, need to get together and demand answers about what happened to Michael Jackson. Because what happened to Michael Jackson is one of the biggest crimes ever been committed in this country. Okay?
Mr. Rowe, is there any way we can talk about a document that you gave me and Attorney Shabazz about what our people usually don't get to hear on these radios, because people are so scared to talk about when they get into talking about people like you talk about in your book, like AEG, William Morris, Howard Rose agencies, creative artist agencies. Most of us don't even know who these people are, but behind the scenes, they run the music industry. Could you talk a little bit about that and something you spent over $200,000 or $300,000 to get a document that exposed them to the point where it's going to change the future of music?
Well, you're referring to is the emails that we extracted from the file, the emails of William Morris and Creative Artists Agency. Those are two of the largest agencies, entertainment agencies in the world, and the most profitable agencies, and the most well-known as well. But anyway, I filed suit against these agencies some years ago. And during discovery, we asked the court to give us permission to pull their emails, which the court allowed us to do. When we pulled those emails, we found out that they had been referring the executives, I might say, of these companies, had been referring to black people as niggers, spooks, coons, and monkeys, not one or two times, but hundreds of times, in their daily email correspondence. And when this information surfaced, concealed from me and the court by colluding with my own attorneys the attorneys for the defendants, and collusion with the court. So, you know, these people try to parade that they do not believe in any type of discrimination. Don't believe that. They thrive off discrimination. They believe in discrimination. They just don't want you to know it.
So, these Jewish agencies?
Totally. Totally.
Mr. Rowe, when you say over 130 some times, which I read with my own eyes, coons, spooks, monkey, niggas, are we talking about, they talking about upcoming artists or young artists that's not made it? Who were they referring to?
They was referring to African Americans of all sorts. Denzel Washington, Bill Cosby, myself, and all different people, a lot of different African Americans. So it wasn't no one that they were referring to. So, you know, to make a long story short, we're still dealing with that today, and we're trying to get, you know, trying to find a lawful resolution to what they did. But to do that, you know, you have to get the law to obey the law. You know, when it comes to cases where black people are to be given a lot of money, and that money is to be taken from white people for their discriminatory ways, they don't like to pay us that kind of money. That's what they always said. I'm sorry, that's what they always meant. When they, and I know you've heard them say this too, when they say we are not for redistributing the wealth. You know, a long time ago, I used to wonder what they meant when they say we are not for redistributing the wealth. You know, I found out later what they really meant when they say we are not for redistributing the wealth. And that is, no matter how they got the wealth, no matter how they obtained the wealth, whether it's through fraudulent or discriminatory means, we are not giving it back. That's what they really meant.
Mr. Rowe.
Yes.
Also, I wanted to ask you this. And in your book, and in knowing you now for going on almost a year and talking to you and you mentoring me in some of this, there's another subject, since we only got 5 minutes, I wanted to bring up. Also, as one of the top black promoters in the United States, in the history of the United States, black promoters, I want you to say, tell me in this audience, so they can know who they're talking to, how much money do you think you had played a part of, how much money did you make Michael Jackson in his career? And number two question, so I won't have to ask another one, is tell us about when they get ready to tour black people in the black communities, tell us about how they discriminate against black promoters to keep you from making that money today.
Well, you know, when it comes to the music industry, they never want blacks to be in control of the money. They don't want you to be in control of the money in any industry, but especially in the music industry. You know, they feel like they should control the wealth when it comes to the music industry, especially when the wealth is being made by black people, because it have always been that way. Black people have always been taken advantage of by the music industry, always. We've never, I mean, if you go back to Billie Holiday, Sam Cooke, and all of the black entertainers, and all of them was great entertainers. But if you go back and if you look at it, you'll see where all of them die broke. Now, that's not coincidental. Now, don't never think it's coincidental. Planned to happen that way. So, you know, I try to explain this to a lot of young people these days that have desires to go into the music industry. But that industry is an evil, can be an evil industry. And it also could be good.